guys, I'm Bharti, your host from Startup Yoga. And today we have someone very special with us today. Lisa Brinkett is a passionate advocate for bridging the gender equality gap. As a chartered accountant and business strategist, she uses her financial and commercial knowledge to support women and non-binary founders to grow their operations. Lisa started investing at the age of 15 and is a role modeling gender lens investing for women. To work towards her vision, Lisa has started She Backs Me, which is a community-owned and operated venture capital firm, seeking to increase financial inclusion by taking context of women and non-binary founders into account. She Backs Me works with private investors to deploy capital to women and non-binary founders who are post-revenue with growing businesses that are capacity constrained. The investment funding provides between $10,000 to $100,000 and sees the funded business grows its top line revenue and meets existing customer demands. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Awesome. So let's start with some fun facts. You started investing at the age of 15. If you don't mind sharing, what was your first investment?
I did. I was working at McDonald's and I saved my salary and I attended a free stockbroking seminar that they were holding and I bought Woolworths shares. So I bought Woolworths shares for, I think it was $2.900 Woolworths shares for $2.95 each. That was my first investment. And I think I sold them at about $20 quite a few years later. But that was my very first investment. It was really about seeing a whole different side of things. I mean, I think I was 16. I had to get my mum to put them in her name. And I had friends that were stacking shelves at Woolworths. And I just really loved the fact that I had just a tiny little bit of ownership of it instead.
That you had to be a very smart kid at the age of 15 to be doing all of that. I mean, most of the people are just trying to figure out, okay, what next? How am I going to clear this class right now?
It was a little bit of, at that point, I think the stockbroker, certainly I was not who he was expecting to attract to his seminar. And I think he had to give me a list of stocks that were even going to be possible to buy for the $300 that I had saved.
Wow, okay. And was McDonald's your first job? Or were you working even before that?
I've always been perhaps a little bit entrepreneurial. I did some face painting at a market before that. That was my very first entrepreneurial activity. I bought my face paints and I set up and I did face painting for kids. And then I did McDonald's. Then McDonald's was my first real job.
Wow. I thought might as well just ask, because I have questions written starting from your first job was at the Big Four. And I'm like, okay, no, let me ask Lisa. I mean, if she invested at 15, I'm sure she's done jobs before that, you know.
Okay. So Deloitte was my first job out of university. So I went to university and I did a Bachelor of Commerce. And I got accepted into Deloitte's graduate program. So that was my first role in the finance field.
Now, it's a great achievement for a first job to, you know, be a part of Deloitte. Can you tell us what should be done to get there? Like any particular skills, or everyone has to be investing at the age of 15?
No, look, I think certainly the Bachelor of Commerce and the accounting and finance is part of the pathway into a Big Four firm. And then they are really looking for people who fit and can do both the numbers and deal with the clients. And so, you know, it's people like to work with people. So I think that there's an equal amount of time that needs to be invested in your technical skills as what there is in your non-technical skills and how you engage with people. And I think that that's probably where entrepreneurship and side hustles and things start to really broaden those skills, because you're out there, you're having to talk to people, and they're seen as really valuable.
So I know you've already answered this, but I'm still going to ask this question to dig a little deeper. What was your school and college life like, apart from, you know, working outside? And
good question. I was always good at school, for sure. So I enjoyed maths and science at school. I was competitive. We had ratings as to who was at the top of the class, and I was always pushing to be in the top. I did start in university doing commerce, and I went to the University of Queensland in Queensland and Brisbane, and I started in a science degree. It was actually my mum who said, hey, businesses are everywhere, I think you should do a commerce degree, and so I started those two together, and then just really loved the language of business and spent more time and finished that
you degree. I think you were a businessman or very entrepreneur even before you started the degree, I think.
Yeah, and I think we all have, I think sometimes, so my parents ran a small business and were relatively entrepreneurial as well. Yeah. And I think that did cultivate an interest for me as well.
Right. Okay. Now, can you tell what skills should a person have for having an outstanding career in finance, and how to stay updated with it? Because, you know, with time each day, some new technology is coming in. How does one stay updated with it?
Yeah, look, I think it's actually the same in every industry. You've got to be passionate about staying on top of it, really. I think that's you've said it in the question, really, is that what makes any person lead in their field is that they are really interested in keeping up to date with what's doing, seeking all the different experiences that are coming through, whether it's actually directly having them by being involved as a team member in a business, or as having the business as a client, or whether it's seeking out to be in trainings or be in education where somebody else is sharing those lessons. I think that we are in this amazingly unique period of time where information is so accessible, and you know, the people that I believe lead are the people that continue to seek that information, and they continue to contextualize it. So they continue to say, how could it be used, how can I use it, how can somebody else I know use it to create value within their business or within their life.
But do you think it's hard, as in, you know, we all are at a point of time where the generation before us, you know, did not have a lot of tech, you know, gadgets around them, while the kids today are born with it, you know. So say our parents got to see mobile and laptops or computers at a very late stage, maybe when they were at their 40s or 50s, while kids today are born with it. So do you think it takes that little extra effort to that, okay, yes, I want to be on top of the game and I want to learn the technology and be up to date? Or because it's very easy to get sucked into the hole of, yeah, we're just doing fine.
Yeah, look, I don't think I necessarily have all the answers to that question. but I do think that you've got to tap into something in yourself that wants to do it. And then you've got to tap into where that's going to help somebody else. And then when those two come together, that's really where the value gets unlocked. I think that learning and not using probably won't be sustainable. And so I think that it's trying to find these pockets where you're just really enthused and excited about what it is that you're learning. And then equally, you can see out in the world where you can then use those skills and make a difference for other people. And it's that, yeah, it's those two things that make a difference.
So you started an amazing venture called SheBacksMe. What is a mission and how can startups basically articulate their values and mission to get the funding?
Yeah, great question. So currently across in an Australian startup report, 4% of women only founders received the total of the venture capital funding. So 4% of went to women, women-led businesses. Mixed teams, it sits a bit higher, it's about 30%. Equally, bank loans, they don't fit for a lot of early stage businesses as well. Most banks don't lend to businesses that have less than 2 years experience. And there's a whole lot of reasons why women in particular might find it difficult to access funding. Things like security. If you're, if you're a single or solo parent and you've got, additional caring responsibilities, it's a far greater decision potentially. Women over 50 assessed based on the age to retirement, which cannot work as well. So we started SheBacksMe to address some of these funding and financing problems. We bring private investors together that have more flexibility for both the way that who the financing goes to and the way that it's done. What we in particular look for is businesses that are growing. They've proven that something works and they're wanting to kind of do more of what they're doing. It might mean more equipment or more inventory or more team members or an extra premise. And they, when they go to a bank, they may be told, you don't have 2 years of operating, or, we can't lend to you because your business income isn't there yet. And it becomes a little bit chicken in the egg because they say, well, if I had the piece of equipment or if I had the inventory or if I had what I needed the money for, my business income would support the loan that I need to do. And equally, venture capital may not be suiting them very well either, because they're not looking to be $100 million businesses. They're not looking to be unicorn or super high growth businesses, but that doesn't mean they're not a good business. It doesn't mean they're not a good investment. So that's where we fit. We particularly seek to support women and non-binary founders. We really see that the gender equality gap. So one of the ways that we can help to fix that is if we invest in women and non-binary businesses, that helps their business grow, which means they themselves will take home more pay, which addresses the gender pay gap. We see that investing in women is a good investment, so it can help women get good returns for their own investment portfolios. And I think women retire with about a third less in terms of their investments than men. So we consider it a win-win where both sides can benefit.
So how can they reach out to you, or is there any process in place where they can, like a website where they can go and apply?
Absolutely. So if you're seeking funding, we definitely, you have to be Australian based, you have to be a woman or non-binary business owner. You have to have a revenue of $50,000 in the last 12 months, and you have to be looking for investment that is going to unlock more revenue for you. We have a funding application form on shebacks.me, which is our website, and when you make an inquiry through there as well, I send you the process that also lets you know how it's going to go. We have two calls. I ask for some financial information as well. And that kind of gives you a sense of how it runs with us.
So when you say 50,000 in revenue, is that per month or is it
last 12 months
combined together?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, you know, you talked about women facing so many issues when they run a business. So apart from reaching out to SheBacksMe, what do you think they can do to overcome these sort of issues if they want to continue running the business? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that, first of all, women need to kind of maybe compare themselves in a favorable light and have the confidence to go for it, for sure. Don't think that you can't do it. Have a crack at it. I do think that the financial aspect of a business is quite important. So if you're not feeling as confident about that, do seek help, do seek support, get on top of it early, and therefore stay on top of it. It will set you up to not only access more funding, but to understand your business better and to give you a better sleep at night factor. I think it's really important for women to look at the fundamentals of their business and say, okay, well, what do I have to sell? Is it clear? Is my pricing clear? Can people buy from me clearly? And how are they becoming aware of me? So I think that there's, you know, and what on the flip side is that women-based business communities and networks are amazing sounding boards and really, really supportive places to be, which is how SheBacksMe started. We have come from Corralis, the CEO community, which is a radically generous community of women in business or women supporters. I think that if you're a woman and you're starting a business, you know that it's the most amazing learning experience that you can ever undertake. Don't neglect your financials, but do ask for help, because there's so many people out there that are just so generous with their resources, their time, their experience, their expertise, and you won't get a better education than starting a business.
Okay. Now, do you think that there's still gender equality in terms of businesses being taken more seriously when they're led by male founders versus female founders?
I think it's changed. I do think it's changing. I think that we've had some amazing women founders in Australia, which have really, and it's not even business, across all areas, whether it's board levels, management positions. You know, we've had this just most amazing generation that have forged a path. And, you know, I think that's great, because it also galvanizes me to continue to forge a path for the people that are coming. But yes, there are still biases there. I think that the great thing is that more and more people are exploring those biases, and they're trying to understand how they can address them, what they can't see in themselves. But absolutely, you're going to find that there will be some biases that do come up. I think that they often extend, though, they extend past gender to business models and customer base and market proposition, because women also tend to target starting businesses in industries that are not as male dominated. So there is also an education piece that ends up happening, where women are not only pitching their business, but they're pitching a particular business model or a particular industry that may not be as familiar to the investors that they're speaking to.
So we see that a lot of change is happening, especially, you know, in the white collar job space, in terms of equality, women getting more powerful role. So now a lot of organizations, they have women as, you know, women heading the organizations. But, you know, when it comes to blue collar workspaces, why do you think women are still underrepresented, especially, you know, in industries like construction, manufacturing, mining, etc.?
Look, I think that there is probably something around the physical parameters of those workplace jobs that has influenced it, and they are also changing. I spent a bit of time doing some work in underground mining, and you know, that is traditionally not a very hospitable place for women, but there's amazing group of women engineers that were, you know, stepping into that space, working, shifting the small things like how the change rooms were set up, and some of the more practical things that make those workplaces more accessible for women. I think that it's still going to take some time, unfortunately, in those industries, and it's taking these really, really courageous women who go in and who are not only, you know, championing change on what they're doing on a work basis, but they're actually looking at, well, what needs to change in the environment for it to actually work for more women to join. And when they do that, it opens it up for more and more women to come in into those industries.
I really feel lucky to be in Australia, as in compared to a lot of other countries, we feel the representation is much more here in terms of people being treated equally and, you know, getting to work any kind of jobs, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really a good place to be in, especially with, you know, the booming times, which, you know, with, you know, the job rates is the lowest right now, like in the sense everyone's getting work. So it's a pretty good place to be in.
I do think that probably generationally is making an impact in Australia as well. I think that because some of the blue collar work in these types of industries, very heavy industries, is quite well remunerated, you're seeing fathers and uncles and people that are bringing in their daughters and their nieces and their, and some of the women, and saying, well, there's no reason why you can't do it.
Can't do it, yeah.
We will bring you in. So I have actually seen probably a really positive generational shift where supervisory men are bringing in and mentoring and bringing in younger women to the workforce, because they can see that it's a, you know, it's a really strong career option and pathway, and will set them up financially from that type of work as well.
Yeah, and I guess you're tougher than we look.
We're certainly tougher than we look. I think that most of the time that stands out for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, because you come from a finance background, please tell us how important investing in today's time is.
Yeah. So I'm a big advocate of all overnight successes are 20 years in the making. I think that certainly the types of investments that I focus on and I look at and that I talk about are ones that are less about picking the right thing and more about the consistency of doing the right thing. So, you know, consistently saving, putting, investing, and understanding where your money's going and for what reasons it's going there. So yes, I'm very much of the personal finance mantras around, you know, save part of your salary, use budgeting, use different envelopes or jars or bank accounts, whatever it takes to stick to that. Learn as much as you can. I'm a true believer that your biggest asset is what you know in the space of investing. I know that I always like to say earn is just learn without the L plates. So you've got to do the learning first to know where you sit. I think what's shifting though now for a whole generation is that we're looking at not only what investments can give us a return that set us up for the future, but what sort of future we want that to be and how our investments will support that. So I think that is the next kind of wave of investment research and trends and how people will view investments is not only what it can give them in terms of a return, but what that money is actually creating in terms of the future. And is that the future that they want to head towards?
Now, you know, people who don't invest, I guess, say that investing is like earning while sleeping. You put in your money, you're going to keep making money. But what are the risks associated with investing, or what should one be cautious about while they invest?
Yeah, so I think that there's just so many dynamics around investing, and that's why I think that if you can be a lifelong student, you're heading in the right direction. At the end of the day, investments are in different underlying assets, and each of those assets, whether we're talking shares, whether we're talking cash, whether we're talking property, commercial property, more derivative type shares like options and things like that, they all have their own risk profile. There is, across those risks of losing your capital, there's risks of it being up one day, down the next, those sorts of things. So you have to get, I think it's part of the work that women are bringing to the financial services space as well, is that you've got to be really clear around what you know of a self-awareness, what you know of yourself. Like what is it that means that you can sleep at night? What is it that creates a sense of security for you personally? And that sits somewhere different for a lot of people. Some people will be completely fine if they know they've got like a backpack and a clean pair of underpants, and after that they're good. Other people are like, if I had to have less than three bathrooms and less than a 2-year-old car, then yeah, things would not be looking good for me. And so I think that there is a really strong level of self-awareness that you have to bring to investing to know where you sit in making those decisions and where they what it looks like for you.
Okay, now, because which you asked me, you're wanting to help women get where they want to be, what do you think is the potential space to enter, for a woman when they're starting a business? Or let me put it this way, what do you think are the potential upcoming industries to start business in where, they can earn good money?
Yeah, it's a great question. I know you sent it to me in advance. And I feel like you've asked me, what is your secret recipe for making gold from scratch? How do you become the alchemist? I feel like if I knew the answer, I would probably be out there doing it. I think that what amazes me about all business owners and all entrepreneurs is that they're constantly finding these amazing opportunities, amazing niches. I think that we're seeing all sorts of trends that have arisen from COVID, whether it be experience-based businesses, the way that people have shifted their buying habits, the way that we are solving problems now. I see a whole bunch of businesses that are really seeing these deep problems that we have in society around, aged care and childcare and water and their food and they're solving those things. I think that probably some of the strongest ways to look at it is what are the problems I want to solve, and then start to research from there potential business opportunities. I think that they're in any area, always look for the person that is able to pave the way. If you say nobody's done this before, then you're probably not looking hard enough. There's always somebody out there that can give lessons to help you move forward and help you to fast track it. And that's a very political answer of not getting to specifics. I think other than that, I'm really intrigued by all the digital business space. So, you know, the way that we're seeing marketplaces and Amazon businesses. And so some of those really, really interest me as well. People that are commercializing content. So that I see some affiliate marketers. There's a lot of stuff that I'm like, wow, this is, you know, it's really, they're often businesses that have really cracked open with technology in the last 5 to 10 years.
And, you know, recently, you know, we've been seeing a trend. We discussed that in the SP program as well, that a lot of people started businesses after facing problems themselves, you know, so they want to rectify those. So that's the easiest way to get into a business, because you know the problem inside out and you just want to solve it. So it's very personally felt as well.
Absolutely. And I think that the only trap that I see people falling in is that they spend more time working on the solution than going back out to talk to other people about how they found the problem. So that's the only thing that I don't know if women do it a little bit more, but I often see women spending quite a bit of time, more time on developing the perfect solution as opposed to hitting the pavement and talking to their potential customers around, well, what would you pay for it, even if it's not quite the perfect solution yet?
Okay. Now, many people, you know, especially a lot of women, are unaware how to integrate technology with their business. Can you guide what is it that they should do or they can do?
Look, there are so many tools out there at the moment. And I think that I myself have become a massive fan of integrations. So I love getting one system, connecting it to the next system, trying to think about, okay, well, if I do this, what does it need? What's the next step? And how can I make it happen automatically without me being involved? I think that always the easiest way to consider technology is to write down what you're doing manually and then ask the question, could there be a way that this could be more efficient? Could there be a way that this could be automated? And in this time, there's nearly always going to be somebody that says, yes, they can. And here's the program, or here's the things that will do it. I mean, my favorites, my favorites at the moment are things like Notion and Airtable for creating information. I love the way I can gather information with Google Forms and integrate it into my databases. And I love the way I can communicate with people via email marketing processes. I'm a bit of a fan of the text message services. So there are so many tools out there, but for me, it's always starting with what do I want to do manually? And then how can I find some tools that help me to speed that up? And I have found motherhood has really forced me to get sharp on some of those tools that just don't have the time that I would have liked. And so it forces me to look for ways to do things better and faster and what technology I can use to do that.
I'm sure your kid teaches you a lot technology-wise as well, because I think the younger generation knows way more than we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's going to be a lot of fun, actually, to be outpaced by them.
Wow, okay. So what are the most common challenges that startup face looking at the current economic scenario?
I think supporting themselves is a massive challenge. There isn't, if you're in that really, really early idea stage and you're between jobs and you're trying to start a business, there isn't a lot of support to keep a roof over your head and food on the table. It requires either having another job or dipping into savings. And so that certainly, you know, certainly a massive challenge for early stage businesses. I think having a plan that creates some commercialization, even if it's not your final product or is useful. Like, I think that potentially the people that are most drawn to entrepreneurship have the best ideas, and they want to see their idea come to reality. But sometimes to bring a little bit of cash in the door, it can be useful to be starting with a product in the same market that you know you want to target and have something to sell in that market, so that you are bringing a little bit of revenue in whilst you build and whilst you come up with ideas. I think the things that aren't as hard as they used to be are education, networking, connecting with people. Having said that, you still have to put yourself out there. And so that does take confidence. And I know that that's still a major barrier for women in particular, but I think for most people, particularly post-COVID, where we've spent a lot of time on our own, is to get out there and to kind of meet, greet, and have conversations and be asked the tough questions about your business and your business idea.
Okay. Now, so we have this segment called the rapid fire section. Before we let you go, and there's no time to think. So whatever we ask you, whatever comes to your mind, you just have to answer straight away. So it's been pretty interesting looking at people answer that one, because sometimes they're like, they surprise themselves.
Yeah.
So let's get started. Okay. What advice would you give to your 22-year-old self today?
Don't take things too seriously.
Okay. If not this, what else would you be doing?
travel reporter in Greece, hopefully.
Wow, that's an interesting one. Okay. You could pick any one, or you could just answer all of them. Which are your favorite columns, blogs, or books to read?
So I'm a book reader, and my favorite books, my favorite finance books, personal finance books, Richest Man in Babylon, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I really love, and there is a money mindset author, Maria Nemeth, who I really enjoy as well.
Okay. Apple or Android?
Apple.
Okay. You've already said this, but I'm still going to ask you anyway. Which is your recent favorite technology or tech company which you're obsessed with?
Oh, and I've got a different one that I can share with you. So Meal Lime is a weekly planning tool for grocery shopping, and I can click all the recipes and it collates my shopping list, and then I click the button and it connects to Woolworths online and everything kind of gets ordered for me for my shopping. So I'm absolutely loving that tool at the moment, but on a business sense, it's certainly anything that has an API and can integrate from one system to the other. I just love that.
Awesome. Okay, now before we sign off, one key takeaway of your life that your listeners should definitely know and learn from?
Be a lifelong learner. I think that when we talk about investments, actually the knowledge that you have is your greatest asset. You can always, nobody can take away what you've learned and what you have to bring. And that's, I think, actually gives you a greater sense of security as you go into investing, because you know that you've got the skills and the base to restart and to rebuild, and those skills and your network, who you know, nobody can take that away from you either. So those two things, what your knowledge is and what your network is, are absolutely very, very valuable assets.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, Lisa. So guys, it's been an amazing conversation with Lisa, who's showed us how to support diversity and adversities, how to be bold in her decisions, and how to carry stuff with conviction to reach her goals. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Brownie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast channel, Startup Yoga, and we'll be back very soon with other very dynamic leader to inspire you to achieve your goals. Thank you.